නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය So we are reading today from the 8th canto, chapter 23, chapter entitled The Demigods Regain the Heavenly Planets, text number 15. Sri Sukra Uvacha Kutastat Karma Vaishamyam Yasya Karmeshwaro Bhavan Yajnesho Yajna Purusha Sarvabhavena Pujitaha Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Sukracharya said, My Lord, You are the enjoyer and lawgiver in all performances of sacrifice, and You are the Yajna Purusha, the person to whom all sacrifices are offered. If one has fully satisfied You, where is the chance of discrepancies or faults in his performances of sacrifice? Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 5.29, the Lord says, Bhoktaram yagyatabasam sarva loka maheshwaram. The Lord, the Supreme Proprietor, is the actual person to be satisfied by the performance of yagyas. The Vishnu Purana 3.8.9 says, Varanashramacharavata purushena parapuman Vishnuraradhyate panta nanyatattho shakaranam. All the Vedic ritualistic sacrifices are performed for the purpose of satisfying Lord Vishnu, the Yajna Purusha. The divisions of society, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas are all meant to satisfy the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. To act according to this principle of the Varnashram institution is called Varnashrama Charana. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13, Suta Goswami says, Atapumbe Dvija Sreshta Varnashrama Vibhagasha Swanastitasya Dharmasya Samsiddhir Haritoshanam. Oh, best among the twice born. It's therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything is meant to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, since Bari Maharaj had satisfied the Lord, he had no faults, and Shukracharya admitted that cursing him was not good. Shukracharya, so seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas. So we are now coming towards the end of this pastime of Vamandev taking over everything that Bali Maharaj had. And of course in the end, the person who actually benefited was Bali Maharaj, because he got everything from the Lord. And finally here, Sukracharya is now admitting the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see Sukracharya, just a few shlokas back, he was actually calling Bali Maharaj a rascal. He was telling him that, do you understand that this person would be taking away everything that you possess and leave nothing for you? Because he is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Sukracharya had the vision to see that Vamandev was none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But as Srila Prabhupada calls him a Smartha Brahmana, because of his conditioning, he was not able to appreciate the sovereignty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was thinking that I am the servant of Bali Maharaj and Bali Maharaj is my protector. So if Bali Maharaj, everything is taken away, I would actually be on the streets. So in spite of seeing and understanding that Vamandev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still Shukracharya was completely bewildered into thinking that actually whatever is being given to him is not by Vishnu, but by Bali Maharaj. So this mentality actually is in all of us. This mentality of thinking that we are actually the controllers. This mentality of thinking that whatever we own or whatever we possess is by our own efforts. And invariably, if we have taken shelter of somebody in this material world, we consider him to be, as far as we are concerned, the Supreme Person. So this is the mentality of the Smartha Brahmana, a person who is addicted to fruitive activities, and whatever pious activities he does is only for the purpose of increasing his material possessions. Recently, I was just talking to one person who was from the community that I belong to. And I was trying to preach to him that basically, you know, we have to understand that we have a supreme controller who gives us everything, and this person is the one that we have to worship. And somehow this person was trying to counteract and say that, no, I mean, it's yes, we appreciate that there is a person who is a controller who is above all of us, but ultimately it is our own actions that determine what is the amount of material prosperity that we have. I mean, everything depends on our own endeavor. And he was bringing in the role of the demigods, and he was saying that if you worship this particular demigod, he will give you this, and if you worship that particular demigod, he will give you that. And whatever I was trying to tell him, that, you know, over and above the demigods, there is this person who is the supreme person, somehow he was not able to relate. And this person has been coming to our temple for so many years. But that conditioning is so deep-rooted in his consciousness that, yes, this is, he is just one of the gods that we have to worship. There are so many gods, and he is just one of them. And unless and until we worship all the gods, we would not be, you know, secure. So this security is something that everybody is trying his level best to achieve. Everybody aspires to be secure in this material world. But only when we come to this path of devotional service do we understand that actually there's no security in this material world. However much we may try to be secure, particularly in the Western countries, we see that there's so many facilities that everybody is made to feel that they are intensely secure. In fact, the whole welfare mechanism of the government in the Western world, there are some countries where right from the womb to the tomb, you are taken care of. In fact, even before you're actually conceived, the government gives you facilities in order to conceive. There are financial incentives that are given to a couple to start planning their family. And then after that, when the child is conceived and the child is born, the government supports this family. The mother is entitled to take a year off from her work, and she's paid practically her entire salary for the time that she is spending with the child. And then when she is willing to resume back, she is given her job back in the same company where she was working. And then you have a medical system which is also so comprehensive. Any small illness that you have, you can immediately go to a doctor. And absolutely there is no cost, because everything is covered through the insurance system. So in the Western world, you find that people, at least from a material point of view, they feel secured. So in such a situation, for them to to be preached to, that actually the security is not being provided by the state or by the government, but by somebody who is, you know, the father of all of us, it's for them incomprehensible. They are not able to appreciate. And no wonder we find that there are so many atheists in the Western world. They just don't want to accept the fact that there is a supreme controller who is controlling each and every one of us. And it is only during times of real distress that they then appreciate that there is somebody who is actually far superior than the state. And that person is playing such an important role in our lives. Like the house that we were staying in, this landlady, she was a very highly qualified lady from the university, which is quite rare in the West. Because most people, they go up to high school, and then after that, they go into the job market, they take up a job. But invariably, they take up low-paying jobs. So it's only a very select few who can actually make it to the university in the West. Because university education is very, very expensive. So unless you're really brilliant and you are subsidized by the state, or you're able to afford to take on such a expensive education, very few people actually make it to the university. So this lady, she had a degree in environmental engineering. And her husband was a PhD in mechanical engineering, also a very highly qualified person. And everything was going on very nicely in their lives, and you know, they had actually migrated from Europe to Canada since about 15 years. And they had purchased their own house, and they had two cars, and everything apparently was going on very nicely in their lives. Till one day, the husband was diagnosed as suffering from a disease called as multiple sclerosis. Now, even I didn't know what this disease, multiple sclerosis, was, and I had to look into the internet to see what it was. And apparently, this is a disease which gradually disables a person. He loses his mental faculties in a very, very gradual way. Along with that, his speech starts slurring, he has difficulty in hearing, his hands starts trembling, and eventually he goes into a wheelchair. So this is a disease which today has got no cure. Even in Ayurveda, there's no cure for this disease. I was just checking up on this website of this Kottakkal Arya Vaidyashalaya, because this lady, she came to us, and since we were from India, she wanted to find out whether there was something that we could do to help her out. So we tried to do some research, and there's no cure for this disease. And this happened about 4 years back, that he was diagnosed to be suffering from this disease. And from that time onwards, all of a sudden, she started becoming very pious. And then the whole family started gravitating towards God and started going to the church and reading the Bible and so on. And then one particular Sunday, she invited us to the temple. She invited us to a church, and she told us that, you know, why don't you come and see the way we worship the Lord. So we went along with her, and actually it was a nice experience. But as soon as we entered into the church, the first thing that they did was they went to a particular place where there were a lot of candles that were kept. And this lady, she took a candle, and then she kissed that candle, and then she muttered a few prayers, and then she lit that candle and placed it over there. And along with her, also her mother was there, so she offered a candle to her mother, and mother kissed it, and then she offered it to us, and we also kissed it and kept it over there. So then I was curious to find out why she is doing it. What is it that she is muttering? What are the prayers that she is muttering? So she said that we are offering this candle to the Lord, praying that He gives us good health, He gives us good wealth, and He gives us good security. He takes care of us. So, well, I said, it's a good prayer. At least they are praying to the Lord. And later on, after we came back home, then I started sharing with her our philosophy and started telling her that, you know, yes, what you did was very nice, going to the church and praying. But ultimately, the security, you know, what you're praying for, what is the purpose? Ultimately, all this is going to end sooner or later. You're praying for the health of your husband. Your husband is down with such a disease. But does it mean that by your prayers he'll be free from death? Will he be free from disease? Will you be free from disease? Will you be free from old age? And this lady, very intelligent lady, she started saying, yes, we never thought of it. I never thought of it like that. We always been taught that we should be going to God and praying for health, wealth, security, and everything should be going on well in our lives. We should be having a good job. All the family members should be all right. So this is what we have been praying for. But what you are saying now makes sense, that actually all this is going to come to an end sooner or later. So what is the purpose of praying to the Lord for such a thing? And then as we were discussing further, she even went to the extent of saying that, you know, how the conception takes place, and you know, how the Srimad Bhagavatam explains about what the Srimad Bhagavatam explains about conception. And, you know, she couldn't even visualize that the child in the womb of its mother is alive. So she made a statement that the soul enters, we understand that there is a soul, and the soul enters into the body of a living entity as soon as the baby is born, as soon as the baby comes out into this world. And then I asked her, but then how do you explain that this particular, you know, you are saying that this baby doesn't have life in the womb of a mother. How do you explain that the baby is kicking? How do you explain the fact that the baby is actually turning on its side? So obviously the baby has got life, even in the womb of its mother. So then she said, I appreciate, yes, what you're saying is right. Obviously, the baby is moving inside the womb. Obviously, it means that there is a life in the baby. So, that they don't even start thinking in those lines, because they have been so much conditioned to thinking that this is what it is. And when you try and explain to them, they are able to appreciate. Similarly, there was a devotee who came into Krishna consciousness about 10 years back. And before that, again, he was a very successful engineer, settled in Canada, and his wife, she was a professor in a college. Everything going on very nicely in their life. They had a daughter, and for some reason, the wife could not conceive once again. So they decided to adopt. They wanted a son, so they decided to adopt a boy. So this boy was adopted from somebody from their neighborhood in India. He was actually an Indian. And the initial years, everything was going on very nicely. But when the boy became around 11 years of age, he fell into bad association. And it's so easy in the West to get carried away by the pressure that is there among the children. And this particular boy just got dragged into some really obnoxious association, and he started taking drugs and alcohol and staying out late at nights. And one fine day, when this boy was 15 years of age, the parents received a call late at night saying that there was a call from the police station saying that your son has been arrested for robbery. So apparently this boy, in the haze of drugs and alcohol, you know, he had gone to a petrol station, and then with a knife, he threatened the petrol pump attendant, you know, to part with this money. And this and in the West, most of the petrol pumps, they have this alarm system. So this attendant had triggered that alarm, and the police immediately, in a couple of minutes. So this is another wonderful phenomenon in the West. Again, part of the security system, right? You have this 911 number. It's a magic mantra. You dial that number, and within 2 minutes, the police will be at your door. And in fact, children, right from the age of 6 years, they are taught to by heart this mantra. They may not by heart anything else, but this mantra they are supposed to by heart. Even to the extent that the police protects the child if the parent is abusing the child. Or even if the parent wants to chastise the child severely, at any time the child can dial 911 and call the police. So, anyway, this attendant has pressed that button and the police came and this boy was arrested. And from the age of 15 till 21, the boy is right now 21, he has been in and out of jail. So this man was explaining how his wife, she was earlier a nice devotee. She used to come to the temple and practice Krishna consciousness at home. And when she saw that her son was in such a situation, she completely lost her faith in Krishna and started questioning as to how is it that if there is a Lord, why should the Lord be doing all this, what is happening to us in our family? So when the mentality of a person is fruitive, then everything they relate to the actions and reactions that are taking place in their lives. It's only when we come to this path of pure devotional service that do we understand the value of just surrendering to the Lord. And here in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning what is it that actually satisfies the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see from the lives of great devotees how they relate to the Lord. What is it? What is the relationship that they have with the Lord by which they are pleasing the Lord even in the way in which they behave? Although their behavior may not be really considered normal, but still, because of the relationship, special relationship that they serve, that they have with the Lord, that relationship is accepted. Like they see from the life of Jagdanand Pandit, who was a very special person. He had such a close relationship with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that the Lord was fearful of him. The Lord was actually afraid of making Jagdanand Pandit unhappy. Once it so happened that Jagdanand Pandit, along with Shivanand Sen, made 16 sears of sandalwood oil. Now, to make sandalwood oil is not so easy. It requires great amount of hard work, long period of time. So Jagdanand Pandit and Shivanand Sen made this oil, and Jagdanand Pandit with great endeavor brought this oil to Jagannath Puri. And then he gave this oil to Govind, the servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and told Govind that you please apply this oil to the Lord. It will be very useful because it reduces the bile and the air in the body. It will be good for the Lord, Lord's health. So when Govind approached the Lord and told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Jagdanand Pandit has given this and he wants this to be applied in your body. So immediately the Lord protested. He said, I'm a sannyasi, how can I apply this on my body? Actually, the best thing to do would be to give this to Lord Jagannath, and we can put it in the lamps that are being offered to Lord Jagannath, and this will be the best purpose for which the oil has been made. So when Jagdanand Pandit asked Govinda whether the Lord is being applied as oil, then Govinda told Jagdanand Pandit that, you know, the Lord is not very doesn't want to apply this oil. So a few days later, again Jagdanand Pandit asked Govinda that you please tell the Lord to apply this oil. And once again, when Govinda told Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately responded that, you know, better that I can also have a messier along with this. You also give me a messier. This will really create so much of bad vibrations if I apply this oil on my body. What will people say? And then the next day, Jagdanand Pandit himself comes and meets the Lord. And then the Lord tells him that, you know, my dear Jagdanand Pandit, in a very nice, sweet way, so as not to offend him, tells him that, you know, I cannot apply this oil on my body, but I think the best thing would be to give it to Jagannath so that it can be used in the lamps that are offered to Jagannath. And Jagdanand Pandit becomes furious and he starts shouting at the top of his voice. He said, who tells you that I've got this oil? I don't have any such oil. Whoever is telling you that I've got this oil is telling all lies. And then he goes to his room and then he takes this huge pot of sandalwood oil and throws it to the floor. And all this oil which was collected with so much of endeavor is wasted. And then Jagdanand Pandit, he goes into his room, he shuts the door and lies down. And then for 3 days, Jagdanand Pandit doesn't come out of his room. And finally, at the end of, on the third day, the Lord comes to Jagdanand Pandit's house and then calls out to Jagdanand Pandit, because Jagdanand Pandit is there inside the house and the door is locked. So he tells him to open the door, and he informs Jagdanand Pandit that, I'm going for my bath, I'll come back, please prepare lunch for me. So immediately Jagdanand Pandit gets up, goes to the kitchen, starts preparing. So many different items he prepares. Takes the help of so many devotees, Ramai Pandit and others, and prepares so many different preparations for the Lord. And then the Lord comes, and then Jagdanand Pandit welcomes the Lord and makes him sit in a comfortable position. And as he's about to serve the Lord tells him that, please keep one more place right next to me. I would like you to also eat along with me. So Jagdanand Pandit tells the Lord, no, no, my dear Lord, you please eat first. I can always eat later. And the Lord sits down and honors prasadam. And Jagdanand Pandit serves so much prasadam to the Lord that the Lord eats 10 times normally what he normally eats. Because the Lord was thinking that if I am going to tell Jagdanand Pandit to stop, then Jagdanand Pandit will start fasting once again. So much of a reciprocation between the Lord and his servant. And then after the Lord had finished his prasadam, then the Lord sat down in front of Jagdanand Pandit and told him that, now you sit. I want to see you eating in front of me. And Jagdanand Pandit tells him, no, my dear Lord, please, you go and take rest. I've got a few others also to whom I have to give prasadam, Ramai Pandit and others who help me with my cooking. I have to give them prasadam, so we'll all eat together, and then we will come and let you know that we have already eaten prasadam. So he tells the Lord that you please go and take rest. So the Lord departs, but before that he tells Govinda, did you wait over here? and see that Jagadanand Pandit eats prasadam, then you come and report to me. So Govinda waits and the Lord departs. And Jagadanand Pandit tells Govinda that you go and massage the Lord's feet. There's no need for you to wait over here. You massage Lord's feet, and as soon as the Lord is resting, you come back over here, and whatever remnants are there of the Lord, I'll give them to you. So Govinda goes back and serves the Lord, and then the Lord is still not feeling comfortable. So he tells Govinda that you go back and see whether Jagadan Pandit is actually having prasadam or not. And then when Govinda goes and sees that Jagadan Pandit is actually eating, then he comes back and reports to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that yes, Jagadan Pandit has actually started eating prasadam. Then the Lord takes rest. So this is that relationship. Although Jagadanand Pandit, one would consider that his behavior with the Lord was very, very unusual, still, because of the special relationship that he had, the Lord was ready to tolerate anything that is done by his devotees. So this is the special feature of devotional service. The Lord, instead of you being a servant of the Lord is actually our servant. If we satisfy the Lord, then the Lord goes to any extent in order to satisfy us. So full security is when we serve the Lord. Not when we consider that this is on account of our own achievements that we feel secure in this material world. When we surrender to the Lord takes care of everything. The Bhagavad Gita tells us that there's nothing that the Lord cannot provide us. He provides what we lack, and he preserves what we have. So everything is taken care of by him when we surrender to him. So Sukracharya is now realizing, by the association of Bali Maharaj, when he sees the exchange between Vamandev and Bali Maharaj, and sees how Vamandev is reciprocating with Bali Maharaj, he's taken away everything from Bali Maharaj, but then he gives to Bali Maharaj something much, much more valuable. So although Shukracharya was trying his level best to ensure that Bali Maharaj retained whatever he had, in the end, the Lord gives Bali Maharaj so much more, including his own personal association as a doorkeeper in Sutala planet. So by the association of Bali Maharaj and Lord Vishnu, Shukracharya's heart is now transformed. And in the next verse, which we'll be doing tomorrow, Shukracharya tells the Lord that just by chanting your holy names, we achieve everything. In fact, this particular verse, the next verse actually is a very important verse that we could use for preaching, because normally people ask us, where in the Srimad Bhagavatam is it said that chanting the holy names of the Lord is the most important thing that we are required to do? The next verse actually says that, because Shukracharya is telling the Lord that your holy name, chanting the holy name, is so valuable and so important. So we'll stop here. Are there any questions, comments? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki chai, Srila Prabhupada ki chai.